Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 2, Episode 5. The Steelers are fully back in camp. As of this afternoon, the CBA should be ratified. The Steelers have actually moved their practice this afternoon from 2:55 to 4 o'clock, Dave. Looks like we're finally going to be set, everybody in, and a full go this afternoon.
Yeah, and they need it, too. The cornerbacks are dropping like flies, it seems, with these hamstring injuries, and it'll be good to have people like Ike Taylor, William Gay back on the field to help alleviate some of the shortage of the cornerbacks that they have out there. But most definitely, it looks like this is going to get wrapped up today, and we can get on with business.
Obviously, the issue now for the Steelers is the Rule 51 issue. The top 51 salaries, they got to be cap compliant today at 4 o'clock. And we've heard Kevin Colbert, you just put a quick post up on your site, SteelersDepot.com, that Colbert doesn't see any more cuts coming. He feels like they're going to be cap compliant. What's your latest read on where the Steelers stand?
Well, it's actually the words come out that it's 4 p.m. tomorrow that they have to be cap compliant for some reason. I guess it's because of all this getting pushed back with the ratification and all. But the Steeler Nation was in panic this morning over the tweet by Adam Schefter that previously reported, I think, roughly $11 million over the cap, and people were freaking out. But people have to remember that all these restructures that they've gotten in place with Ben Roethlisberger, Harrison, Kimo Atu, Kiesel, and Miller, those things have not been submitted yet. And, that's a lot of your money right there as well. They've only really announced, I think, the four re-signings of Ike Taylor, Sean Swisham, Willie Clone, and Jonathan Scott. So, their whole, if they would have restructured these guys and had them sign off on them already, these guys would not have been able to practice all this time. So imagine having all this paperwork that you're just waiting to submit to the league office after practice today. That's basically what you have. You have a log jam of paperwork here, to be submitted. And even Colbert, said this morning that, basically they're cap compliant. They just, and as far as the veteran moves and, people were feared that there might be another cut coming. I quote him here on, from the Stan Saverin show on ESPN 970 this morning. He said, "No, I think that most of the terminations that we had to do were done at this point. Of course, there will be some roster adjustments from people that weren't under contract that would then count against your 90. And then they, how's it go? And they hadn't been counted for previously. So we have to make roster adjustments, but no cap adjustments. From a move standpoint, we can handle the rest of that when renegotiations." And basically what that means is, like we were talking the other day, 93 or 94, I forget how many people that are actually probably in camp there right now. But, a lot of those guys are not on the roster. So when you see these flurry of moves go in, you're going to see a lot of the deals announced for people like Chris Hoke and some of the other ones that have recently, the long snapper Greg Warren is yet to be announced. And you'll see some of these undrafted guys on the roster terminated. They're probably seeing the Turk after the practice today. So, right. That's where they stand. Now, previously going into these restructures, putting on my junior capologist hat, I had them roughly, 7.5 to 8 million over, and that's pretty close to the number that Adam Schefter reported this morning. But all those, that number that he was given does not take into account those renegotiations. So I'm sure Omar Khan has got this thing well underhand, and just watch the waiver wire the next few days, and it'll all make sense to you.
Yeah, I think that's the point. And excuse me, I think the Steelers, they've got to be very happy with where they are. They had a lot of guys, it looks like, willing to restructure, and why wouldn't you? It's more guaranteed money up front. Generally, the restructures, I think maybe you tweeted it, but, the point is, the point is these guys are getting the same amount of money and they're getting more up front, and it looks like they're doing the team a favor. So it's a great PR move for these guys. You know, some of it gets pushed down the road. So for the Steelers, it means they have to continually be creative. If for some reason the cap weren't to increase year to year, they'd probably run into some problems. But everybody's basically playing the same game and assumes that number is going to grow by a certain percentage annually. So, they've had a bunch of guys willing to restructure and work this all out. But at the end of the day, from where we were a week ago, I think when things got finalized, or maybe, 10 days ago, the roster looks almost identical to what you would have imagined, maybe even better, because the Steelers didn't lose any of these guys. They made the choice to release Max Starks and Antoine Randall-El. But, I think as a Steeler fan, you got to be pretty pleased. There are no splashy signings. They signed Gilmore, the tight end from Tampa, and he's the only outside guy they brought in. But, like I said, nothing splashy, no big headline stuff, re-signing your own guys. But that's a Steeler way of doing business, and they took care of business very quickly and very efficiently.
Yeah, I agree, and I think we talked about that on the last podcast that, this is a Steeler way, and if you expected anything other than this, you probably need to follow a little bit closer, as far as that goes. Now, as far as, you've got Woodley sitting out there with a $10 million plus tag on him right now. After all this gets done, now the front office, once they're cap compliant and can get in full swing of camp, then they can really start over the next month, 5 weeks or so, really start working hard on Polamalu extension and getting Woodley extended. The two sides, of course, are probably not close, and I know the Tom Bahaly deal with the Chiefs last night, it's probably going to, add to be part of the negotiations as far as that goes. But the Steelers are notorious for only negotiating, in training camp. They don't like to redo contracts during the year. But he's got a whole 5 weeks now to work out deals with them and maybe Lawrence Timmons too, because let's face it, you've got $10 million-plus cap charge in Woodley that if you redo him and bring his cap number down this year to say about $3 million, okay, there's another $7 million that can go towards both Troy and Timmons to lower their cap number as well, because I think Troy's running around with an $8 million cap number on him this year. And, it's not a necessity to get, Timmons. They'll do one or the other, I think, either Timmons or Polamalu. But the other one, if they need to and can't get a deal done, they can let them wear the franchise tag next offseason and work with them, in the same method that they did Woodley this year. So I would fear not. They know how to structure these things and the timing on when to do these to push them out. Because you got to remember, too, you have James Ferrier and Larry Foote probably playing their final year in the Steelers uniform. Those cap hits are going to drop off the board next year.
Aaron Smith
too, as well. So, you're not going to have that cap money, to worry about there. And that's about probably about $12 million.
Yep.
Or so right around in there. So, you're going to have room to accommodate these new contracts going forward. And then you're going to see the slew of the young linebackers, Jason Worlds and Sylvester Stevenson, Stevenson Sylvester, start stepping up, into the holes that are created by this. And the Steelers just keep a constant flow of this. And, it's pretty much what we've come to expect over the years.
Yeah, that's certainly the drafting philosophy. We saw it again this year. You draft guys, and Cam Hayward's the perfect example. The Steelers are they look down the road. Where are you going to need help 2 to 3 years down the road? And hopefully, you don't have injuries where you have to push these guys into roles that they might not be ready for. It's a unique system that the Steelers have put together. And as a franchise, they've just done a great job of keeping competitive on the field and being able to groom talent and have it step up second, third year, that type of thing. A little easier on the offense. We saw it with Mike Wallace last year. The defense with the schemes that LeBeau has and some of the things they ask these guys to do maybe takes a little longer, a little more sophisticated. You need to be physically probably a little more demanding, a little stronger, a little faster in that respect. In terms of polishing your role, but they've done a great job, and we continue to see it, and it's not headline stuff. I mean, the Eagles are grabbing all the headlines this offseason with Asamoah, Ronnie Brown, the whole list of guys that they have signed. Some splashy stuff, some interesting stuff, but they've got depth issues on both lines. So the Steelers aren't making any headlines, but they're going to go to camp. They're going to do their work. And, you know, I always laugh when Vegas comes out with their odds for the Super Bowl. And I think the Steelers were listed seventh or eighth this year in the odds, you know, behind teams like the Jets and the Falcons and, you know, of course, the Patriots, et cetera. And, you know, it's not splashy, but it's effective.
Yeah. And getting to those odds, Bodog released the second version, their August odds. As far as Super Bowl, you know, champion this year. And the original February odds, they had the Steelers at 10-1 right after the Super Bowl against the Packers. They've moved now to 14-1. And even the prior update to this, I think they were at moved to 12-1. So, and it's not surprising that teams like Philadelphia and the Jets and you know, are getting the betters the money right now because of all the flashy free agency stuff that's gone on. So, you know, it's fun to look at. I like posting them. It gives some people something to talk about. But we've seen with the Steelers, you know, team in the past, it's hard to bet against them sometimes.
Yep. Well, let's get into one issue, Dave, that it looks like maybe neither is going to come to fruition. But there was talk when Max Starks was originally cut that he would be potentially be re-signed. And when Flozell was released, that was not an issue at all. And now it looks like maybe that's flipped. Now, I think the reality is unless somebody goes down with an injury, they're not going to re-sign either guy. But what's your take on where that stands?
Well, I don't know. You know, you hear Dulac report again yesterday or the day before, I think it was, about saying that Adams could come back. And he did note, you know, which something I've been banging for a long time, and that's Willie Colon possibility of him kicking inside the guard. I still would not rule that out as a possibility if Adams is brought back. In fact, you know, Dulac at the time was very you know, tried to make a point that this is not going to happen, that you'd see cheerleaders on the sideline before you would see Willie Colon take a snap at guard. I wouldn't rule that out, you know, just yet, because even the Bears, when they were looking at signing Colon in, you know, just recently in free agency here, they were wanting him to play guard. And Colon has, even though I know it might not be the thing that he really, really wants to do, but, you know, they've got him under contract now. And if he could play guard for one season while they try to, you know, solve the problems with, and get Keith Williams, you know, up to speed and all like that, why wouldn't you consider putting, you know, Willie, you know, in the phone booth there, so to speak? Because, A, he's coming off of that Achilles injury on top of it. It would be much easier on him first season back to play, you know, kind of stacked inside the line right there. So it's not out of the question. Now who do they bring back? I'm sure if Ben Roethlisberger had his way, it would be Max Starks. But I guess it comes down to what each wants, you know, as far as the contract goes, as far as their health goes. And, you know, A, salary cap room right now, we won't see any move like that, you know, for a while. Or as you said, possibly, you know, if an injury happens. So I don't know. You know, I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon, but there's a possibility if one comes back that Colon could kick inside.
Yep. The other news that came out right when we finished our podcast on Tuesday, Manny Sanders out for 3 weeks. We had speculated, and you had called this even a couple weeks ago, that maybe he wasn't coming back as quickly as anticipated. Well, I certainly, you know, we came to the conclusion that, you know, Plex being in Steeler camp and them being so enamored of Plex maybe meant that there were some other issues that we didn't know about. And certainly the next shoe dropped about 10 minutes after we finished up on Tuesday, that he's going to be out 3 weeks. He's got a heel problem. He's in a walking boot. I heard him talk both yesterday and today. He seems to think it's not a big deal. If he is back for the last two preseason games, it won't be a big deal. But we've seen how these things linger. Foot injuries are always a problem, particularly for a speed guy. So that's some fresh news there. And, you know, obviously not good news. Antonio Brown's going to step up and play a bigger role than I think we anticipated.
Yeah, and, you know, 1-1 didn't, you know, equal 2 this time around as far as the Plaxico interest. And I've mentioned this on the blog and on this podcast before that, you know, it just didn't smell right why all the interest in Plaxico. And, you know, I think we're seeing why. I think maybe there were some concerns maybe about that foot, like I mentioned in the past. And, you know, I hope, you know, basically what he had done with his foot is it was about 70% healed. So he had the bone marrow taken out of his heel, I believe, in his left foot, and then put into the injected into the foot to kind of speed up the process. Now, he says possibility of possibly playing by the third preseason game. I would be very, very surprised if we saw him before the fourth game. And in fact, they might even let him go, you know, without that, because sure, he could use the practice and game time, but you know, you got to be careful with a kid in his feet like this, especially a young wide receiver. And it's just not one foot that he's had operated on. He's had both of them operated on. So there is some concern there, and it does explain a little bit why they had such the interest in Plaxico.
Yep. No question. My personal pet peeve here is Ryan Clark popping off every seemingly 20 minutes about a new topic. He's going to have a radio show on The Fan in Pittsburgh once a week, an hour radio show. Ryan Clark does a lot of TV work. He's a very personable guy. He's a very bright, articulate guy. But it certainly seems like he wants to be in the limelight here in training camp. And his whole conversation yesterday about, you know, it doesn't look like we're going to ratify the CBA. The Steelers are really getting screwed here with Goodell. Goodell, being in charge of discipline still. I don't know how the other teams are going to look at it. It really put the, he really had a whole discourse about how, you know, this was going to get pushed back till Tuesday. We're not concerned about guys being able to practice. We're more concerned about how this disciplinary stuff is going to go down. And then it was reported maybe that he had a little tiff with Joe Bendel, who's a buddy of mine who does radio announcing in Pittsburgh, because Bendel was asking him some tough questions. And we'll try to track that transcript down. What's your take on Ryan and what he's doing? And, does he need to focus on football a little bit more here?
I think he does. And Ryan likes being on TV. Let's not kid ourselves. You know, he goes back and forth on ESPN First Take in the mornings. You see his face up there. He joins 93.7, I think, once a week for a spot. Very active on Twitter, very vocal person. And I'm with you. I think he's being a little bit too, I mean, he said his piece now. This is not the first time he's knocked Goodell around either, because he was on with one of those Denver stations a couple of weeks ago, and I've got the transcription of that up on the blog as well, where he basically, you know, was saying that Commissioner Goodell is really, you know, holding this league back. And he's made that piece known now. It's out there. As far as the tiff with Joe Bendel goes, from what I know about Joe Bendel, and I don't know him personally like you do, Joe's not one to take a bunch of crap, per se. And I think from what I understand, you know, Ryan kind of put his hand up and thought Joe had an agenda, so to speak, with his line of questioning. And from what I understand, they got a little chest to chest there. So there was supposedly one video camera there, but I'm betting the Steelers are doing their best to keep that from surfacing further, you know, stir things up here. But it's out there in the media. But as far as the personal conduct policy goes, Goodell was at the Panthers training camp yesterday, and Scott Hansen from NFL Network, you know, showed up there and was asking him the hard questions and pretty much asked Goodell. Well, he did. He asked Goodell point blank if he'd be taking discipline against James Harrison for the comments he made in Men's Journal magazine. And he said, no, he would not. So we can put that to bed.
Yep. Yep. And I think that's worth noting. There were a lot of talking heads in the media. I wish they would stand up and be counted now, because there are a lot of guys who said, A, you know, he should be suspended. He should be disciplined. B, the NFL has to do it. You know, it makes them, you know, look really soft if they don't do it. They went through this litany of things. The reality is, you know, you knew right out of the chute the Steelers weren't going to do anything. I mean, first of all, there's nothing to do. This is free speech. And we've seen, you know, the NFL maybe overstep its bounds at times, but I think it would have looked really petty if Goodell had done something. I think he's doing the right thing here, and I'm not saying this as a Steeler fan. I'm saying this for the league. When you start, you know, really getting after people for, you know, how they dress, what they say, you're walking a really fine line. They don't put this behind them and move on, because, you know, James said some dumb things, as, you know, athletes do all the time. Let's not parse everybody's every word and think about, you know, whether they need to be fined, and then suspension would have been a joke. And, you know, the Steelers handled this well. They, you know, they talked to James. James apologized. He didn't mean it, but, you know, so what? He apologized. It's just silly stuff.
Yeah, and we've talked about this in previous podcast about social media now, and let's face it, these guys had a lot of time on their hands this offseason to do interviews and play on Twitter, you know, and you know, hopefully in future years, you know, with this 10-year agreement with CBA, maybe there'll be, you know, of course there's going to be less, you know, mini camp practices and probably some less OTA sessions, but it's one more thing to kind of keep them busy and on course, talking to the coaches on a regular basis and all. So I'm with you, David. I mean, it would have been, I think Goodell knows it would be been stupid to do. We'll see how he acts towards the Steelers if there's any questionable hits, which I'm sure there's going to be some questionable hits again this year, and we'll see what happens if Harrison's involved with one or any Steeler for that matter going forward. But I think Goodell got the message from that Clark and Harrison are trying to send, and we'll just have to see where it goes from here.
Yep. Any other things out of camp? Let's get into the football stuff. You know, hopefully this is the last we spend time really focusing on the salary cap, on the off-field discipline issues. You know, now we can really get into the football. These guys are going to be, as we said, hopefully everybody on the practice field today at 4 o'clock. We can leave this stuff behind us. What are your early takes on what's going on at camp? You know, Baron Batch has been one of the pleasant surprises early on. What else is jumping out at you?
Well, I think Curtis Brown got a little welcome to the NFL training camp the other day with all those rash of injuries that the Steelers have had, mostly hamstring and quad stuff, with guys like Cortez Allen, Cresden Butler, Bryant McFadden, even missed yesterday with a hamstring as well. And, you know, they were kind of short on rotation. And I had my guy Nick Ricchetta, who was out there for those first couple of days of training camp, who called in to me on the second day. And basically, they were short people, and they were having to do double duty. And Curtis Brown, you know, he answered the bell from what I understand. He threw up a couple of times, but he refused to come off, played really good on the field. And I think Tomlin noticed that as well. So this is a kid that hey, let's look at it here. You know, it's good that Ike Taylor and William Gay and those guys, you know, are not on the field right now, to give this kid a few more extra reps because he needs them. And, you know, maybe it's going to make him progress just a little bit faster. But, you know, as Tomlin has said about all these rookies, or more in particular about Baron Batch, who he's been asked about, I think, the last couple of times after practice, Tomlin just gives the reply, you know, he's a rookie. And he's right, for the matter. I know people think Tomlin's getting a little snippy these days, but, you know, until Tomlin sees it during a preseason game, you know, it's football in shorts, as he likes to say.
Yep.
And Arnaz Battle, I think Arnaz Battle's surprising a few people. I think you have Lima Sweden, West Lions doing a little battle for possibly the fifth or sixth spot on, you know, the receiving core. And I think there's still a good chance that Arnaz Battle might make this team because of what he adds to the special teams coverages. And he's from most reports, he's kind of stuck out so far as, you know, a guy that's, you know, making some catches during these training camp sessions and all. So he might be, you know, saving his roster spot here.
He better catch every ball his way and make every special teams tackle. I put him at, I'm guessing, my personal guess is he's got about a 30-40% chance of making the squad.
Well, do you think the Steelers are going to carry six wide receivers, David? Let's assume Emmanuel Sanders is, you know, plays in that final preseason game. You know, you're going to have, of course, Wallace, Ward, Sanders, and Brown. Those are gimmies on the roster. Are you going to keep just one more wide receiver, or are you going to keep two more?
Well, like we've talked about a couple times, I think, you know, the 52nd and 53rd roster spots are probably not position dependent. I think we'll see that, you know, the best special teams guy is going to make the team. And whether that's an extra outside linebacker, an extra defensive back, an extra wide receiver, I don't see it happening, but even an extra running back, you know, I don't have the answer to that question. It's, just, you know, Arnaz Battle's not really competing as much necessarily. Well, he's certainly competing with Lima Sweet at some point, at some level, but he's also competing with, you know, Mario Harvey and some of the extra DBs in camp to make that squad.
Well, I think Arnaz Battle becomes your this year Antoine Randall L, in the fact that A, he can move a little bit better. You know, he's in his 30s, I think, but, you know, he can play special teams. He knows, I believe he knows all the slot stuff and, you know, all the routes involved with all positions. So I think he's a little bit more versatile as far as some of these young guys go. I could really see him holding on to six wide receivers here. And, you know, Lima Swede and West Lions battle it out for, maybe the fifth or sixth spot. But, you know, we'll know real quick when these preseason games start. But it would not surprise me right now if Battle makes the roster. Now, I had Tyler Grisham on my first 53 prediction last week, but that was more of me kind of making a statement that I needed to see something out of Lima Swede. You know, I knew deep down in my heart that Grisham is not going to make this roster. And after talking to my boy Nick the other day, I'm almost certain Grisham's not going to make this roster. I think it comes down to Battle, Swede, and Lyons, maybe those three battling for two spots.
Right, right. Okay, any other guy that that we've seen maybe on the defensive side, interior line guys? Is it Gray was looking pretty good in some of the head-on-head stuff?
Yeah,
nose tackle from Southern Miss.
Yeah, Gray evidently has been getting some penetration. Now, you got to remember what line he's working on with these guys. I think Steve McClendon's still working with the second team, the last I heard. And I think Gray's working with the third team. So, you know, it's hard to – he's getting penetration against, you know, the other kind of scrubs on the Steelers' offensive line if they're rotating out like that. So we're going to have to watch him real close in preseason and the level of competition that he's going up against. I have heard some good things about the progression now of Keith Williams, the guard that they drafted in the sixth round. It seems like his head's not spinning as much. I'm a little bit concerned about Marcus Gilbert and all this time that he's missed so far with his hamstring. So hopefully he can get back on the field pretty soon. And I've also heard, in fact, we forgot to kind of bump this a little bit. We've got an interview with Wesley Saunders, the undrafted tight end from South Carolina, coming up in the second portion of this show. So we invite you to stay tuned for that. But, you know, Saunders is showing a little bit. I think he needs to work on his blocking, but I don't think there's any doubt, you know, as he told us in our interview, that he's coming out of a pass-happy Steve Spurrier offense. So I think it all comes down to whether or not he can block, and maybe he beats out Gilmore for that second spot, but it'll be a tough chore.
Yep, stay tuned for that Wesley Saunders interview. He was a very articulate, interesting guy. Nice 10 minutes he spent with us. Enjoyed that very much. And as you pointed out, he said he's got to call Steve Spurrier and thank him for the wide open offense they had in South Carolina, because that made the transition to the NFL a lot easier. And he said he actually, you know, the playbook wasn't holding him back at all. He felt, you know, reasonably comfortable, which you never hear that from a guy 5 days into camp, particularly since he never got the playbook until, you know, a week ago. So that was interesting stuff to hear. And we'll be keeping an eye on him. Yeah. You mentioned the D-line guys. McClendon, it's going to be tough for Gray, McClendon, Sonny Harris, these guys in camp. You know, six roster spots are nailed down between the four guys from last year, with Hoke being five, and then Cam Hayward. That's six D line guys there. Nick Eason's gone, so there may be a spot there, but these guys are really battling basically to stay on the practice squad.
Yeah, and I think you can give up hope on Sonny Harris. From what I understand, he's not flashing or anything like that, and I just don't see him making the roster. I think it comes down to whether or not if they decide they're going to carry an extra nose tackle at this point. But really, I could see a guy like either McClendon or Gray, probably Gray. They might try to stash Gray on the practice squad to have him groomed and ready for next year, you know, and to follow his progress to see whether or not they have to draft a nose tackle or not next year. But I tell you what's got me most worried about anything is all these veterans. Now, I don't worry about a guy like Ike Taylor. That guy stays in immaculate shape. But some of these other veterans that have been, you know, unable to practice because of the CBA rules, boy, I worry about when they come hitting on the field, because a lot of these guys want to play. Let's face it, they've been standing around watching football, and they want to get out there and start, you know, getting in the groove here. I just hope that there's no more slew of hamstring injuries here. And of course, you know, the last thing we need is an ACL or an MCL or anything like that. So that's one thing to pay close attention to this week as well.
Absolutely. anything else you want to follow up on, Dave, before we get to our interview with Wesley Saunders?
Just that, you know, the word from Dulac again, and you know, Dulac, you have to take it with a grain of salt, but it makes sense, his report about Chris Carter, the fifth round draft pick. You know, they're making him stand up now from a defensive line position. He'll be an outside linebacker of the future. The guy has a speed, evidently, that shows. And Dulac reports that this kid's got to work to get on, get stronger. And that definitely indeed makes a lot of sense. And I think you'll see him kind of slowly. You know, if he does make the 53 and not put on the practice squad, he'll might be a guy they turn to on special teams. He might be inactive the first couple weeks, but they'll definitely be working on getting him stronger like they did Worlds this last season. So other than that, no, I think we wrapped it back up there, and you can take us to the Saunders interview here.
Yeah, stay tuned. We'll close out the first half of Episode 5, Season 2 of the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, and we'll come back and have a little 10-minute chat with undrafted free agent Wesley Saunders, who was signed with the Steelers once the CBA basically got agreed to, and he's in camp, and you can hear what he has to say, some interesting stuff, and we'll be back at you either sometime over the weekend or Monday with Episode 6 of the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. Thanks for listening. Welcome back to the Terrible Podcast. We're pleased to have as our guest Wesley Saunders, tight end, University of South Carolina, one of the undrafted free agents in Steeler camp. Wes, really appreciate you taking the time to join us today.
Oh, no problem, man. My pleasure.
Hey, Wes, look, everybody's talked about what a talent you are. You had some issues at South Carolina. You didn't get taken in the draft. Had to be tough after the draft not being with the team because of the lockout. How'd you deal with that? How'd you keep yourself in shape? What kept you going in the offseason?
It was very tough, especially, last season, this time last year, going into my senior year of college, I really had high expectations for myself and my team, and not being able to play, was very saddening to me. But, I took the next step and entered the draft, and then, I broke my foot while I was training for the draft, which was another blow. So, the draft came around, so I had pretty much two strikes against me. I got hurt, and I was suspended, and, there were all these questions about my character and whatnot. And, I didn't get drafted, and that was a really, really tough pill to swallow. But, I just kept working at it. And, honestly, the lockout actually helped me a little bit because it gave my foot time, extra time to heal after my surgery in April. So I got back to 100%. And just in the nick of time, the lockout ended, I'm back here, back on the field finally.
Wesley, as soon as that, I know you had to be in really ecstatic as soon as that lockout was lifted and the phone started ringing. How did you decide what led into the decision to sign with the Steelers? And on top of that, after you answer that, lead us through about your first week of camp when you got to La Trobe.
Oh, well, the Steelers, man, when you think of the NFL, you think of maybe two or three marquee teams, maybe the Cowboys, the Packers, and, of course, the Steelers up there in one of those, the dominant powerhouses every year. And it's just a tradition. And the fact that they, thought enough of me, even though I was hurt and I had all these quote-unquote questions about my character, before the draft, they thought enough of me to actually fly me up for a visit and let me know that they were interested. Now, they didn't pull the trigger in the draft, obviously, but as soon as free agency opened back up and the lockout ended, they were the first team to call, and I wanted to make sure that I was up here. And I appreciated that. I had a lot of calls from different teams that day, but they were the very first ones to call, and they were very persistent. So I appreciated that. So it was really a no-brainer for me to come up here and with Coach Tomlin and his staff and Coach Daniels. But our first week of practice has been very intense. We're not the OTAs and rookie camp a few months ago that we would have had if the lockout had not been going on. We didn't have that, so now we pretty much have to cram everything into a small window. And a lot of the guys are picking up pretty fast, actually. Our first preseason game is 9 days away, and the coaches understand that we're under a lot of a lot of stuff has been thrown at us at one time, but a lot of guys are handling it pretty well, and it's pretty exciting.
The play, they always talk about the difference in the playbook, and obviously being an undrafted guy, you're a little behind the curve. How are you finding, the formations, the sets, the language? Is that coming quickly? Are you spending extra time in the film room and in the playbook? Have your head in the playbook at night?
It's coming pretty quickly. A lot of guys forget that I played for offensive guru Steve Spurrier in South Carolina. So, he had that playbook wide open. So, as far as learning new things, it really hasn't been that hard for me, especially since the fact that a lot of the terminology here that we use on offense, Coach Spurrier was using in South Carolina.
That's a big advantage, huh?
very big advantage. Very big advantage. I need to call Coach Spray soon and thank him for that big old playbook we had in South Carolina, because it's really helped me learn to adjust to the things that we have to learn here.
Wesley, we've had a guy up there at training camp giving us, along with the major media, calling in some nightly reports to SteelersDepot.com as well. He describes you as one nasty SOB, and I really like that. And it sounds like you got a chip on your shoulder. Do you think that's really going to play into a chance at this 53-man roster? And would you describe yourself as a kind of a nasty player on the field?
My last football game I played in was January 2nd, 2010. You know, a year and a half ago. So I've been itching to get back on the field and show what I've got. And a lot of questions that I would have answered last season about me being maybe soft or, you know, playing tentatively, I didn't get a chance to answer it. So, you know, coming on the field, there's still those questions that arise. You know, is he ready to play? Is he this? Is he that? And, you know, that was the first thing I wanted to come out here and do. And Coach Tomlin let us know the first day of camp that he's looking for violence. He's looking for guys to come out there and play nasty. So that's the thing. That's the thing I had to do. And it's pretty exciting to hear that people have been saying those things about me, because that's the look I want to give when I got out there on the field.
How did let me top on top of that real quick. How did the backs on backers go the other day? You know, there was a pretty good word about Baron Batch and his performance, but we haven't really heard about you. Who did you face, and how did you fare?
I don't even remember who we faced. I went about 5 or 6 times, but I had to get the technique down. You know, it's kind of a biased drill. You know, you got the linebackers just going straight at the quarterback. You don't have off the line to help chip or anything like that. It's just you and the guy, and they can go right, left, or through you. So, you know, you just have to anchor down and get in there. But, you know, I got beat once, but as far as all the other times, you know, I won the majority.
Hey, Wes, one of the things they always talk about with rookies, whether you're a second-round pick or you're an undrafted free agent, is you can make the team by being good on special teams. Have they talked to you about that? Do you see yourself having a role in the game on the 12th against the Skins on special teams?
Oh, definitely. I see myself working in the rotation on kickoff return and punt return, as well as the punt team and on field goals. So, you know, I'm working on all those teams right now, and I'm pretty excited about that, as well as certain situations where I'm working in with the first team offense with Heath Miller and David Johnson as the as the primary tight end. So I'm pretty excited about that too.
If you were gonna think about your game and the things that you know, that you most want to improve on, what kind of, would you highlight one thing for us?
I just want to be a dominant blocker. You know, it's a lot of tight ends in the league that are decent blockers and good blockers, but I want to be that guy that's dominant, and, you know, you can run the ball behind me or to my side at any given point in the game.
You know, Steeler fans love that, man. They love hearing that.
Oh, yeah, you know, because my pass-catching ability has really never been an issue for me. And blocking has always been something that I've had to work at, and now being here with Coach Daniels and such good guys on the offensive line and Heath Miller knowing what to do, and especially going against such a good defense, I don't have a choice but to be a good blocker. So, you know, I want to be looked at as a dominant blocker.
You brought up Heath Miller there. You know, what kind of things have you learned from him? You know, not getting too specific, but you know, what would you note that you've learned the most from Miller since you've been up there in Latrobe?
Oh, man, he's a great guy. You know, he's like my big brother. You know, he taught me a lot of stuff in a short amount of time, just as far as running routes and how to run routes and the depth that we need to run them, and especially going against our defense. Certain guys have certain tendencies that we need to play to. It's, you know, there's everything. There's the little stuff that you really wouldn't think about. He's taught me, and it's made everything a lot easier. And, you know, I appreciate that. I'm learning stuff every day.
Go ahead, Dave.
Okay, I was going to ask him, you know, let me tell you, of the undrafted free agents that have come in, Wesley, Steeler Nation knows who you are. You're really being talked about on all the blogs and on the message boards and all like that. Who did you end up rooming with there in Latrobe? And have they made you sing the fight song or anything like that yet?
Coincidentally, I'm rooming with one of my longtime rivals, Miguel Chavis, from Clemson University. I don't know who set that up, but anybody who knows about
somebody had a sense of humor, huh?
Yeah, they had to. South Carolina and Clemson hate each other, but you know, I've known Miguel since high school, so it's pretty cool being here. He's actually had to sing a song at dinner one time. The vets made him sing. Fortunately, I haven't had to do that yet, but I'm pretty sure it's coming soon.
Well, Wesley, look, we appreciate you taking the time. Really nice to talk to you. Well, a lot of people in Steeler Nation are rooting for you. You know, we know it's some tough competition. Sometimes the Steelers have carried four tight ends on the roster, so we know they signed Gilmore, and we'll look forward to seeing you on August 12th against the Skins. What number are you wearing?
Probably number 44 that day.
44. All right. Well, great stuff, and we'll be in touch with you again before the preseason's over. Thanks for taking the time today.
Oh, no problem. Pleasure is mine, man. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
That's Wesley Saunders, undrafted tight end from South Carolina, making a lot of waves. You know, in Steeler Nation, has a great shot of making the roster here, and we appreciate Wesley for joining us on the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.